Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Dais, a podcast about the stories taking place in and around El Paso County, Colorado. I'm your host, Scott Anderson, and today I am joined by Emily Bowker, the Director of Development, Strategy, and Partnerships for Safe Passage. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for inviting me over here. I really appreciate it. Before we get started, I want to quickly add that if listeners are interested in more stories about people doing good in and around El Paso County, or hearing from county leadership about local government priorities and how they operate, you can find additional episodes of this podcast on your podcast platform of choice. But to get started today, Emily, I was wondering if you could share some background about yourself and how you came to be associated with Safe Passage.
Sure. Yes. So I am actually a licensed clinical social worker. So I've been in the world of social work for, over 20 years, which seems crazy to say. And I've worked with other nonprofits in this community, such as, you know, TESA. I worked at what was Memorial Hospital at the time doing medical social work, now is UC Health. And so I was interfacing, you know, when you're working with one nonprofit, you're working with a lot of others. And so I ran the children's program at TESA. And as part of that, then I sometimes would have kids that had witnessed domestic violence, but also had a co-occurrence of child abuse that was happening in the home as well. And so I became initially familiar with Safe Passage by one of the kiddos that I was working with had to come over to Safe Passage for a forensic interview. And so that was my initial, you know, interaction. And then, you know, would just continue to hear great things about the work that they were doing. And then I started having a couple of kids and was staying home with my kids. And a person I used to work with actually reached out to me and said, hey, we have a position on the board of Safe Passage and we're wondering if you would join the board of directors. So I did and was on the board of directors for a couple of years. And in that capacity, I was doing some fundraising for Safe Passage as the chair of the Resource Development Committee. And they were really wanting someone to come on staff and create a position in that regard because they hadn't had anybody in that role before. So they created that position. I applied. I got the position, started out part-time, quickly moved to full-time, and then have been here ever since. And it's been about, it was about 5 years in February.
Oh, so, wow. All right. Well, yeah. Congratulations for five
Thank
years.
Thank you. Yep. That,
I feel like these days that's a really long time at any organization.
I know.
So that's really great. So can you talk about Safe Passage itself and what the main mission of the organization is?
Yes. Yep, definitely. So we are a children's advocacy center. So we provide critical healing forensic services to kids in the midst of child abuse investigations. A large majority of the cases that we work with, the largest majority is sexual abuse cases, but we also work with kids that have experienced or witnessed domestic violence, homicide, or have been a subject to a severe physical abuse. So our official mission is that we give abused children a voice and enable the healing process by acting as a single source of contact for medical, investigative, and legal services. So here, that means that we're working with a lot of different agencies that are investigating these cases, and we're really that one space where families can come and provide the services in one location. So we have been in this community for 30 years. We just celebrated 30 years yesterday, actually, April 10th. And we are kind of the hub for that multidisciplinary approach to the investigative process. So we, like I had mentioned to you earlier, we are a co-located children's advocacy center. So for 30 years, we've been working with law enforcement and, you know, legal teams and things like that, medical teams associated with these investigations. But now we're actually all housed in one location. So we became a co-located center. We're the only co-located children's advocacy center in the state of Colorado. And the key partners that are in the building with us are the Colorado Springs Police Department, Child Crimes Unit, El Paso County Sheriff's Office, El Paso County Department of Human Services, UC Health, the Family Center, which is providing mental health care, Kid Power, which is another nonprofit in the community doing great work for kids, and then our Safe Passage staff is here as well.
And what have you seen as the main benefit of that co-location strategy as opposed to, it sounds like how the rest of the state of Colorado does it?
Right. Yeah, you know, it really affords just better communication rather than sending that email or picking that up that phone, you know, and leaving a message and waiting to hear back from someone in regards to a case. You can just walk down the hall, you know? And along with the fact that before we didn't have like a UC Health in the building with us. And so sometimes families would have to come back for a medical exam and a lot of families wouldn't come back. And so, you know, people are able to come here. It's kind of, they get the services at the time that they come, they don't have to come back, you know, hopefully, to receive any services. And so it's really, It's really child-friendly, focused, and really makes it easy for families and allows all the agencies that are working together to have even more of a streamlined approach.
Yeah, and you know that's one of the things I was thinking too is this is centered around kids. Like the whole point of the organization is to be that advocate for kids, be there for them. And what do you think it does for them to have that all in one space? I mean, I can see how it could be great for the organizations, like, oh, we don't have to, you know, go back and forth to each other's offices and things like that. But for the kids specifically, mm-hmm. like, what do you think that does for them to be able to not have to go across town to another agency to get something done or not have to go into a hospital to have another service done? Like, what do you think that does for them?
I think one piece is that it really has the potential of decreasing trauma because, like you and I talked about before, too, is that, you know, when kids are having to tell these stories over and over to all the different people involved, it really increases trauma because they're having to retell the story. And then, you know, if you think of parents, we have kids, and yeah. you're hauling them around to different doctor's appointments and things like that, different specialists or whatever, it's exhausting. It's yeah. exhausting on the family. It causes stress. You know, parents get irritable and whatnot. So I really just think that it just kind of provides a more calm mm-hmm. approach to what really, I mean, we say that kids are often coming to us on their darkest days because sure. they're having to talk about something that was really horrific that happened. And so for them to just feel some type of peace around the fact that they don't have to work super hard to make it happen or to be able to share what they've shared, it's all here.
Yeah. So. No, that's really nice. So yeah. Can you talk about like how many children do you serve and what communities do you serve? I mean, you're here in El Paso County, mm-hmm. But does your reach extend beyond that at all?
Yeah. So last year, I'll give the statistics for last year. Last year, we had 732 primary victims of abuse. So those are the kids or teens that are receiving the actual forensic interview and getting the other forensic services. And then 728 secondary victims. So that's their caregiver that brought them, the non-offending caregiver or foster parent, or, you know, that can include a lot of different types of caregivers. And then 237 siblings that came along that were cared for in our playroom. And then out of that, then we had about a little over 600 received a medical consult with one of the nurses here on staff or received a general medical exam. And then about 70 of those kiddos received a sexual assault nurse examination here. We only have a 5-day window to collect evidence once a crime occurs. And a lot of kids that are disclosing abuse in this nature, they delay their disclosures. They don't tell right when it happens. And so we have a very short window to collect evidence. So about 70 of those received a sexual assault nurse examination. So, you know, we say we service 14 to 1500 primary and secondary victims a year, mm-hmm. Generally. And over we celebrated 30 years. So we were totaling those numbers, and it's been about 22,000 primary victims and 20,000 secondary victims over the last 30 years. So we are servicing kids up to the age of 18 and the at-risk adult population, so developmentally delayed adults, as they're often needing an interview on the level of, you know, a child interview. And we primarily service the 4th Judicial District, so okay. that's El Paso and Teller counties. Mm-hmm. And then we will partner with FBI and Homeland Security if they're needing a space to be able to do an interview as well. So...
Very good.
Yeah.
So one thing that I got to talk with a colleague of mine about last week, Dr. Jason Lester, he works in our DHS department. We talked about how April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Yes.
Why is that such an important thing to highlight for your organization specifically?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, it gives us and the community a moment to just reflect on really what child abuse is and that it is happening and how we each can play a role in ensuring that children are kept safe. I think a lot of times we don't want to believe that it's happening or we want to just think that it's for someone else to deal with, but really it's our business, you know, like everything is our business. We all are the eyes and the ears in this community for all children, not just our own. And so it really encourages us to push people to do something about the issue. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we feel helpless, like we don't know how to help, we don't know what to do. But when you think of the statistics that more than 600,000 kids are abused in the U.S. each year, I mean, that's like a staggering statistic, you know?
Yeah, and not one that's nice to hear, but absolutely.
And in our county specifically, we have the highest number of child abuse reporting in the state of Colorado here. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if we can somehow highlight the fact that we all can do our part, you know, to mm-hmm. make it a safer place for kids in our community, that's what it really offers for us, we feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you talk about then how important it is for the organization to be viewed as a place that the community can depend on or even turn to in their time of need.
Yeah, so we want people to depend on us and to know that we are here. Partly too, because as we grapple with this whole idea of the lasting impact of child abuse in communities, we want people to know that we're here. We have been here. We've been here for 30 years. We're not going to go anywhere, and we're going to be that constant that can be counted on to really be providing the best practices and services without a doubt to anyone that's going to walk through this. We often, like I said, don't really want to believe that this exists. And you know, I have 4 kids of my own, and heaven forbid something like this would happen, but for us to know that if it does happen, there is a place that kids can go. That isn't a police station. It's, you know, right. It's not the emergency room. It's, you know, it's more of a child-friendly area. And, you know, it's like 1 in 10 children will experience sexual abuse before the age of 18. And so, I mean, it's going to touch all of us in some way, whether it's on our own kids, but it's maybe somebody we know.
Right.
And so just for people to know that there's a place here that really has kids at the front.
Yeah. So you mentioned a lot of the organizations that are in the building, the CSPD, El Paso County Sheriff's Office, Kid Power, and a couple of others. Are there any other organizations in the area to help benefit the programs that you work on and help these kids who are coming to you for help?
Yeah. As you know, I mean, the city of Colorado Springs has so many great nonprofits doing amazing work to really support people in our community. And one of the big pieces that I haven't really mentioned is that we have advocates on staff that meet with families. And so when the kiddo is getting their interview and things like that, we have an advocate that is meeting with the parent or caregiver that comes in with them to provide them with a bunch of different resources and services. And a big part of that is, you know, are you experiencing food insecurity? Here is, you know, a referral to Care and Share or to Tri-Likes Cares. I was like, what's their last name? Tri-Likes Cares is the full name. Or, you know, different food pantries within the area. Mm-hmm. Are you experiencing housing issues? You know, so we're working with a lot of those other nonprofits and organizations that can provide those services. We're working with different therapists and things like that that we can refer the kids out to for therapy if it's not here within the family center. And so I think that that's a big piece of other organizations that we're working with, you know, to really link our families to anything that's out there that would benefit them.
Yeah. I mean, and like you talked about, there are so many organizations, nonprofit or otherwise, that are out there that are available to help for just about any scenario you can possibly think of. Colorado Springs really is really great with that. And so one of the things that is probably the most interesting to me when I've had these conversations is learning about personal stories that organizations have to share, to let people know, you know, how it really affects real people. I think that's sometimes hard to understand for people who, you know, maybe haven't experienced something like this or, you know, feel very separated from it for whatever reason. So can you share a personal story or two that Safe Passage has that you think can really help demonstrate the work that you guys are able to do in the community?
Yep. Yeah, I definitely can. I'm always kind of pulling on these as I do, you know, some development and fundraising. And so mm-hmm. people, they do want to know like where their money's going or who is sure. helping and things like that. So I do try sure. to ask our staff every once in a while to give me some information. As you know, the information is confidential, so I have to change some of the details of names and things like that. But mm-hmm. one that I often share is about a 14-year-old girl that came forward with a story of abuse and that it was sexual abuse by her grandfather. And at the time, she disclosed it to her mother, who then made a report to law enforcement. And what made this particular situation a little bit sticky is that they were living with the grandparents at the time. And so she came then to Safe Passage for a forensic interview, and she had a hard time, you know, disclosing what had happened, but she did, and she was extremely brave for disclosing the nature of all that abuse that had been going on. And the information that she did provide was pretty detailed enough where they could move forward with some prosecution against the grandfather. So while she was being interviewed, then the Safe Passage advocate, like I talked about, met with her mom and was able to provide information, we provide education and information too on how this trauma is going to affect her, you know, mm-hmm. potentially, behaviorally, things like yeah. that. And then information and referrals. You know, for different therapeutic services. And then she also got a referral to Teen Power, which is Kid Power Up, they have a teen version of that also, where she could go and, you know, experience some of their services and get some of her, you know, power back. Mm-hmm. And then due to the fact that they were living with the grandparents at the time, and then this, you know, abuse had was come, she had come forward with this abuse. The advocate gave them housing referrals and information and things like that about other options for them to go. Yeah. So it was past the, evidence collection window for them to be able to do a sexual assault nurse examination. And so she just talked with the nurse, from UC Health and was able to ask questions about her body, about what had happened. And she was able to receive some reassurance that everything was going to be okay, from a physical aspect of things. And then 2 months after her interview, the grandfather was arrested. And then about 7 months later, the jury convicted him of sexual abuse, and he was put in prison. So as you can imagine, it was a huge issue within the family, and created a lot of waves of just disbelief. And, you know, a lot of times kids come forward with these stories and people don't believe them and don't believe that it happened. But she luckily had a parent that did believe and brought her here for that. So we are just in awe constantly of kids and teens that come forward and are brave enough to do so, you know, even knowing or not knowing of what it's going to create within the family sometimes. You know, 77% of cases that we see are people that kids know. So it's not this whole stranger danger thing as much as it is, you know, people that kids are actually who they're familiar with. So that's one story that I think about. Another one that kind of, every story that comes through here is so different in its nature. Some of them we don't see this conviction happening.
Sure.
Sometimes we don't get enough information in the interview. Or we do, but there's other, you know, parts of the investigation that it's just, we're not able to prosecute. We had a couple, young boys that came in, one little boy that was 18 months old, and then his brother who was 4, the 18 month old had experienced broken bones in 3 different places in his body. And, he had been in surgery the day before, for those, injuries. And he was not verbal and not able, obviously, to have an interview at the age of 18 months. But we were able to bring the brother here and the brother to see if he could disclose anything, because they weren't sure if the abuse had been caused by a childcare worker or by a parent. Mm-hmm. And so we have those situations too, or kids that have witnessed domestic violence and then are, you know, were able to ask the kids some questions in regards to the nature of what they've seen to see if that would help in the investigation at all. So that's another example of a story. The kids at that time were in the care of their grandmother, and so she was the one that brought them here for the interview. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what happened with the outcome of that situation, but I remember being there that day when they came in. So
yeah,
it's a lot of different types and a lot of heavy things, but yeah.
Yeah, no, And I am always curious. This is not a job I could do. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I have the capability to do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm always curious about people who are able to be a part of the process. The people who work here at Safe Passage, whether it's, you know, the sheriff's office or whether it's, you know, a Kid Power, any step of the process. What have you seen since you've been here the last 5 years with the staff that really allows them, I guess, to take in all of this? I mean, they're taking on trauma, right? Mm-hmm. What do you see in them that allows them to do that and still be able to, honestly, still be able to function, right? Mm-hmm. And be mm-hmm. able to be, continue to do this incredible work that is necessary in the community.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think to a certain degree, some of us are cut out for this work and some of us aren't, right? Just like in other types of, you know, jobs and professions and things like that. So I do think it takes a special person to be able to hear these stories day in and day out. I do think that the environment that you create within an organization also, as far as support and, you know, we kind of, you know, our executive director just leads from this space of, it's kind of a no questions asked policy. If you need a day, you get to take a day, you know, as long as there's not like something crazy going on here where we need somebody, but we really just try to support each other. I think that a big piece too, that I hear from, I'm not doing the direct service right now as far as interviewing and things like that, but I do hear from them is that it's interesting how one case that you hear really hits somebody really hard in one way, but then it doesn't bother somebody else as much the other way, but then they'll hear another story 2 days later that's really disruptive for them, you know? Sure. And so I guess what's good about that is that not everyone's down at the same time with the same situation. And so, you know, they can kind of trade off in regards to, you know, giving each other some space if they need it. Mm-hmm. One thing when you were talking a little bit about what's the benefit of having everybody here, one piece of that when we were doing some of the research around putting this all together, there weren't a ton of research articles, but there were a few. And one of them talked about how we're often in these crisis moments together, right? When families are coming in, they're sharing these super intense things. And then everyone goes back to their respective offices. And sometimes you don't hear the outcome. You don't fully know. Sometimes there are cases you follow. But here, it's like, we can share in the crisis, but we also get to share in the successes, you know, and hear that sometimes a little bit quicker. And so I'll be in the break room sometimes and I overhear someone from, you know, one of the detectives from the police department talking to one of our advocates and saying, hey, this is what happened. This person, you know, I've heard that the kid's doing well.
Yeah.
And then now that we have a therapeutic group on site, you know, the goal is that kids are coming back for therapy too. And then we get to see that piece of them doing well.
Yeah.
And I think that really is what can sustain, you know, some of these moments when you're just in it, in the thick of it with people in really big times of crisis is when you can see that they're doing well later.
Yeah, no. And that actually is, I think, a really important part of that is, you know, in other organizations I've spoken with, like they provide that one service there and then, you know, they see the kid or the person they're serving, you know, go off to something else. And then, you know, maybe you never see him again and you just don't know what happens. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're kind of left to wonder, hopefully things turned out well, but you never know. And in this situation where you are able to have a little bit more of that visibility on the process and, you know, that they're doing better. Definitely certainly seems to be something that would help give you that energy to kind of keep things going. And again, I mean, like I said, that's just always interesting to me because to your point, it takes different people to do different things. And even within that team of people, like you said, something might hit someone differently than it hits another person. Just having the right people in place. And this just goes for any organization, right? Like having the right people in place is so important to making anything happen. And I mean, you must have the right people in place in place here.
Yeah. We like to think so.
Yeah. No, that's really great. Yeah. So for those people who may be seeking services, how can they go about obtaining those services from Safe Passage?
Yeah. So, you know, anyone can call our number anytime. It's 719-636-2460. You know, and someone will always be around and available to answer the call 8 to 5. However, any of the cases that we're working with are coming to us through law enforcement or Department of Human Services is through a report that's been made, and through that process it's been determined that some of the services needed here are part of that investigative process. And so not just anyone can show up and ask for a forensic interview, but we have advocates that are here that take community calls that are able, you know, so if someone has a question like, hey, I have a neighbor, it seems like something's going on in the home, I'm concerned, you know, I mean, we're always available to be able to answer some of those questions. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, very good. So this is a nonprofit organization, as we've mentioned. I'm sure there are plenty of opportunities for people to get involved if it's something that they want to do. What kind of opportunities are available for people and where can they go to find those opportunities?
So we are always looking for community volunteers to be able to, you know, work with our kids and families. And so we often say that our volunteers are sometimes the first friendly face that families see when they walk in. So they're here to greet the families, offer them something to eat and drink, and then, you know, even play with the kids in the playroom while they're waiting for their interview to happen, or just hang out with the teen in our waiting room. And so really they're kind of providing that comfort and safety for kids when they walk through the doors. So we are always looking for people to do that, you know, one shift a week or a couple shifts a week or, you know, whatnot. We get a lot of interns through UCCS and through some of the local universities. That's wonderful. And they cycle through about every 3 to 4 months, which is hard sometimes because then we're having to retrain.
Right. Yeah.
So if we have people within the community that are coming and are here on a longer term basis, that obviously is a little bit really helpful for us as well. And you can go to our website, which is www.safepassagecac.org. And we have a volunteer tab, I believe. And then there's an application on there you can fill out and send in, and then you'll be contacted by our volunteer coordinator in regards to getting involved. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, before we close out the conversation, I was just wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to add that you think would be important for listeners to know about.
I think it's that piece where, you know, this is child abuse is all of our business. It's just not just for certain people or even just those of us in the work that are in child abuse work. So I would just encourage people, if they suspect any type of child abuse that's going on, to call, local human service hotline. Here for the state of Colorado, it's 1-888-CO-4KIDS, the number 4KIDS. It's a law enforcement, not an emergency number. Sometimes it can be really scary to make that call, but you can make anonymous reports. And I think it's just this good reminder, especially during Child Abuse Prevention Month, that as the community, we are the eyes and ears for children in our community.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Emily. I really appreciate you taking the time today and for all the work that you guys do here at Safe Passage. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking.
Absolutely. If you are interested in listening to additional episodes of Beyond the Dais, be sure to look for us on Podbean or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.